You are now listening to the Claim It Podcast with me, your host, Trisha Huffman, your joyologist. On this podcast, I love to have conversations with people who I find inspiring and intriguing, and we get into the journey of their lives. My hope is that by you listening to other people's stories and not just their talking points about, you know, what they're up to or their big project that they just launched, that you will feel less lonely on this wild and windy journey of being human. Oh, it is windy. And that you'll have some more compassion for yourself, hopefully see that you can make a change at any time. Just that we all have different paths and they twist and turn, and it's not always a straight upward line. Most times it's not. On today's episode, we are having someone on, because you are here on this journey with me, who's been on several times, my good friend, Katie Horwich. We got into her journey a couple years back when she was first on, and then she also came on for a couple of when I was doing like real talk conversations or current life conversations. That's what it is, where we just like got on and started talking about whatever. So this time we are more talking about her current big project that just happened, but we do go back into her journey of life a little bit. Her new big project is her book. Her first book, Want Yourself, is officially out in the world now. It's called Want Yourself, Shift Your Self-Talk, and Unearth the Strength in Who You Were All Along. Katie and I have like similar messages, but at the same time, very different. We are very different people in how our minds operate and how we think and how we react, if that makes sense. So it's like we have this, we can talk about the same things, but in a different way. So, which I love because we all resonate with different things and people, but also it's interesting to me. Like, I'm like, oh yeah, self-talk. Yeah, I do self-talk too. But how Katie gets into it, and then how she has learned her own tools and created them, some of them are similar to mine, some are different. Like, obviously, it all supports each other. Anyway, I freaking love her. I am so excited about this book and the tools that she does give you. And as when I had this conversation, I had yet to have seen the book. So while I knew what it was about, I hadn't had it in front of me to page through. So it was really cool for me to like learn about it. And again, since we have a sort of similar purpose and interest, it was cool to be like, oh, cool, you approach it like that way or this, or, you know, too, because we're our own people who came to these things our own way. So anyway, I hope you love this episode and I hope you go and get Want Yourself, because I really, really know that it'll support you no matter where you are on your personal journey of life and self-talk. And, you know, even if you are someone who's like me, that's like, yeah, I know all that stuff, self-talk. No, there's so much just good resources and information and ways to look at things differently in her book. All right, let's get into it. Katie is back. Now, it's been a while, though.
It's been a while. But because I've also been on many times.
You have been on many times, but I feel even like the last time. So, Katie, I'll have to link all episodes. Katie was on for, you know, one of my regular old episodes where we go through the journey of life. We learned about her acting dreams. We learned about some like body image sort of things. What would you describe?
Yeah, body image, eating disorders, self-doubt, like the whole shebang.
What led her to starting WANT, which is Women Against Negative Talk? And then she like started it and then didn't even do anything with it for a while and then did things with it. And anyway.
Good memory.
Now, and then we had two episodes that were just, what did I call them? Like current life or like
current
whatever.
Current life combos.
Current life conversations where there was no preconceived, this is what we're going to talk about. It was just like, we got on and just like talking about what was going on with us in our lives. But now, Katie's book, Want Yourself, Want, again, there's that Woman Against Negative Talk, Want Yourself, is coming out in the world. And this is so special because, you know, I love supporting everyone, but Katie and I have really been in the background, the back end, I don't know, supporting each other on our journeys from when I was writing my book proposal and she was cheering me on. And I'm about to get emotional because y'all, I'm crying. Oh. You would think when you do such a big thing that everybody's going to show up and cheer you on and support you. And that doesn't happen.
Yeah. To like everyone else, your book is a book. Go figure.
Or just like whatever that you're working on your book proposal. Cool. Like maybe it's again, it's not necessarily that those other people are terrible, non-supportive people. They just maybe don't get it. They're like, sure, 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 whatever. So I just remember Katie like, you know, she would like, let me have a sparkling rosé to celebrate you for like, because I turned a draft in or something like these things. Like it really was special for you to be cheering me on and supporting me through that. Cause yeah, it's a big, it's such a big thing. And then now your book
I know,
is coming out and we got to support each other through it in the background.
Well, and let me just say it was
in the foreground
and in the foreground, too. It was so much fun to cheer you on and celebrate you and celebrate, especially the smaller moments, because I feel like and we just talked about this off the air before we started. But I feel like those smaller moments, unless you've been, and I hadn't been through it at the time, but I knew enough people to know what a process it would be and that those smaller moments really weren't that small at all. And so being able to celebrate you during those times, I think, first of all, it was so much fun and so joyful for me. And also, it was something that I could reference when I was going through those moments and being like, oh yeah, remember when you celebrated Trisha when she did XYZ? Like, remember to celebrate yourself like you did Trisha. And it really helped, you know, keep me on track. So it just, it was a boomerang that came right back. And you have been so kind, so supportive, so amazing through it all, like from even before I had an agent and I just had my draft of a proposal. So thank you so much.
You're so welcome. And we're going to keep going, but just note for everyone out there, like, I think so often we can stop ourselves from cheering people on or supporting them. Like even people you don't really know on social media, right? Has anybody ever been like, oh, I don't need to leave a comment or send them a DM that says good job or congratulations because they don't need to hear it from me, or they know how well they're doing, or, oh, they've got these people I'm sure that are celebrating them. And that really, like, how meaningful, even if you don't know the person, like those messages can be. But yes, for the people in your life, because I sometimes too, I was in that process and would sort of like notice like, wow, this person did that, but how come these people didn't? Now, part of my brain would want to like go into, well, does that mean this about, or they're not your real friends or this or that? And then I'd be like, well, wait, that friend, like, have I congratulated them every time a song came out? And these are people of all different career levels too. And like, oh, well, let me do a little check, Trisha. Like, I'm about to write off all these people because they didn't support me in the way I was hoped to be supported. And then, like, have I been that person for every single person every single time? No. Okay.
And also recognizing that, like, these things, and I think that this goes beyond, you know, just, not just, but solely book writing. But we have these times in our lives. It could be anything from a wedding to a kid to a job to, I don't know, running a marathon. Like, these things are so important and hold so much weight in our brains when we are doing it. And I found that it's really important to remember that just because it's the only thing that can take up my brain space doesn't mean that it is taking up any significant amount of brain space for anyone else. You know, like, everybody has something going on that they care a lot about. And what I realized pretty early on, I was like, you need to be the person who cares the most about this. And that has to be, that has to be the base level of enough for you. Because if you're looking to the other people to celebrate you. Like, curate your group of your inner circle people and tell them how what you need during those celebratory moments. Like, be explicit about it, because you can't assume that they're automatically going to know, because everyone likes to celebrate differently. But above all, make sure that you are the person whose support and celebration matters most to you, you know?
Yeah, 1000%. And yeah, and it's also, yeah, people have so much going on in their own lives. Like you were saying, that we have no idea. Like they also just like, we're humans and we forget. And so, but yeah, it's like, and I too, it's like sometimes have to remind, like, it's okay also to remind people or to be like, oh, you know what? I'm really, you know, feeling like low. Can you acknowledge me or this or that? Like it's just interesting how our brains can spin things that aren't even things.
Totally.
But also show up for people, support them, send them those loving messages.
Yes. Yes. They mean so, so much. And like, there's no reason to, even if you're making up a reason, there's no reason to feel strange or weird about it. Cause sometimes I know we can feel weird or like a certain way about giving people compliments or showering them with praise. We don't want to look thirsty or like we're smothering them or be weird or awkward, but
often for me it's like, oh, they won't care, they for me, they don't need my congratulations.
That's one way I would stop myself.
Oh, like they're probably getting so much, like they don't need mine, or who am I to congratulate them? Like that's one way I've stopped myself in the past.
Yeah, a way that I have stopped myself in a way that people have expressed to me when they've sent me like, you know, a beautiful message. They're like, I hope this isn't weird. I know that like we don't actually know each other, and it's not weird. You're not making it weird. You're making it beautiful.
Exactly. No, and even like, yeah, people that have been like following you on social media for like, people be like, oh no, love this. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, thank you so much. Like,
right, like
no, please,
this whole time.
Please.
That's amazing.
Like, or people like apologize. I'm so sorry. I have to tell you. I'm like, please don't apologize to like for telling me how much you love my book or my
work. Right. Right.
Okay. Moving on. I want to do just a catch up before we like even get to the book. So I feel like I think it was the last time we had the conversation, the current life conversation, I think that was before you had moved. Like, I think that was when you were living in the apartment that you didn't like. And so you were like trying to like make it better and like, oh, okay, I can still go for a run back at my old neighborhood or this. Like, you were like, you guys were like, okay, we're going to stay here until lease is up, but like, this isn't it. And now you've moved again.
Yeah. And we bought. So
yeah,
we're here for a bit. Yeah, last time we talked, it was the heart of New York City that we were living in, which is wonderful. However, when you're someone who needs to come home to your cozy nooks at the end of every day, like I am, being in truly the middle, like the arteries, the capillaries of New York City, It was really hard. And I think that the area where I lived, there were a lot of hotels, there were a lot of tourists. It felt very like people are either visiting this area or they're working in this area. They're not necessarily living in this area, which was really wonderful because I didn't know that that was a qualifier for what it meant to feel at home, so to speak. I need to feel like I am a part of a community, of a neighborhood. Like you, where you live, I know is such a community and such a neighborhood. And I'm now back on the Upper West Side where we were before we were in that apartment. So we took sort of a gap year to take advantage of COVID deals and live in a place that we might not live otherwise. And to make sure that we wanted to be on the Upper West Side before we, you know, took this big leap of buying. And I'm so happy that that happened because we were really able to find an area where it felt like it is such a community. Obviously, there are things, of course, that I miss about that apartment, about that area that I was in now that I have some distance from it. But I think that's a really good sign because it means that it was something that was meant to happen and served a really good purpose.
Yeah, no, I love how you frame that, because no, I reflect on that too. Like, cause yeah, where I am right now, I do really love, and it's in a smaller home, and like realizing how much I've known. I mean, I've been such a vagabond and moved a lot because I was touring and I barely had a year lease and would do different things. But I always knew that when I was living somewhere that I could walk to something. Like I didn't need, like I did love living in New York City for my year. I went to college in Chicago. So I knew I loved cities, but I also then loved nature and I loved this and I loved the beach. Like I mean, I've tried so many different things. But then once it was like, okay, we are having a family, let's settle down. What the thing to do is, okay, let's move here to this house with this much space and space for a playroom and this and all of these things that it sounded like was the best idea, what you should do. But it didn't feel like a should. It felt like, yeah, this is like, let's do this. That's like, this sounds like a great idea. And then realizing like, no, you know what? I would rather be, yeah, like in a town that feels more like a community. I don't like having that much space. I didn't like having it upstairs.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like
listen,
having
you're
one
talking
floor.
To a New Yorker here. I'm like,
right.
I don't know what
yeah,
I
Yeah, you
do
have a
tinier,
much tinier space, but it's like, you know, like, so it's just so interesting is like, but sometimes that's the thing. You don't know it until you explore things. And then sometimes I think people can beat themselves up like, oh no, that's a terrible mistake that we did that, or we lived here and we could have blah, 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 and we could have blah, 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 this, whatever. But you didn't know. Like, you don't know until you know. You need to take those chances and try those things to see, oh no, this isn't actually what I need. A lot of people need this. A lot of people like this. And it's not for me. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And part of that, you know, that is so much of how I went into the book writing and publishing process as well, because I know that we've talked about this. I don't know if I talked about it on the other 8 times that I've been on the podcast, but I wrote the first draft, not what's now become the final draft, but the initial draft of Want Yourself. I wrote that between 2019 and 2020. And I, before that, I had a proposal and I was pitching it to different agents. And I got to a point where I was like, I just want to see what I'm standing behind. And I'm someone who needs to know, I don't need to know everything, but I need to know what I'm fighting for in order to like really push me more in one direction or the other. Because I also had a moment where I was like, I could totally self-publish this. And so I thought, let's see what I'm actually standing behind. And if this is something that I would want to go through the entire, I mean, self-publishing is a whole other beast. So that's a whole other conversation. Like neither of them are easy to say the least, but it's like each of them has their own perks, their own challenges. And it's ultimately about like, okay, what's the game that you want to play here? And once I had the draft, I was like, okay, I want to play the game of traditional publishing. I might have an awful experience, which I'm not, by the way, spoiler alert. I might despise it, but I will never know until I try. And I can always self-publish in the future. But for this first book, I just want to see, even if I don't end up liking it or it's not what I was expecting, I want to be able to say, okay, well, I did that. And now I have that experience to draw from.
Yeah. And I forget now when you were talking about that too, I think parts of like, yeah, your journey were coming back to me. Cause didn't you got an agent and then was it like, let's hold off though? Like, I like this, let's hold off. Was that you? And then like you got approached?
Kind of.
So to write something else?
Yeah.
For someone else? And then yeah. It was like, okay, well then wait a minute. Like,
yeah, so there were a few different parts to this story. The first part is when I first started pitching agents, I believe it was in 2018. And I pitched with you know, a full proposal. And I was lucky enough that the first agent that I pitched to, they actually, not only did they respond to me, but we had multiple calls, and they actually ended up, obviously they're not the person that I ended up working with, but they passed and also gave me some great feedback, which does not always happen. And you know that sometimes it's just like you never hear from a person. And I was pitching to multiple people, and all of them, none of them didn't respond, which was really interesting to me and signaled to me that I had something that was sticky, that was worth exploring. And then I had been pitching to agents for the last year and a half or so. And I was like, okay, I need to know what this book is. I need to write this and I need to just see. And that was when I got to that point. And eventually that led me to finding my agent. And yeah, she said to me like, hey, let's work on some of the foundational stuff before we go forward. And I got approached in that time by another, a publisher. I want to call it like a publisher's assistant. But I got approached by someone, by a publishing company, to write a book, which I didn't really realize was something that happened. But it does happen. I've learned now that it happens quite often when there's a subject matter or something that a publisher is like, oh, we really want a book about this. This publisher really wanted a book about self-talk. And my agent, I will love her forever, no matter what, but I will love her forever, especially for this moment. As we were talking about it, she was like, you know, Katie, I feel like putting your ideas out into the universe and putting that out before you go with someone else's ideas, even if it feels like it's a foot in the door, it just sends a sign to the universe that says that you are on your own side and that you believe in this, and only good things can happen from that. And then, yeah, and then we went out, and the rest is history, as they say.
So in that beautifully beautiful statement that the agent said was basically like, well, no, if you're getting approached from this publisher, don't just take that deal of the book they want you to write. Why don't, let's go full out and pitch this to other publishers, your book.
Well, your and I think story. That maybe if it was a different, idea or different framework, like it wasn't just about like, no, don't go with someone else's idea, go with your own. It was that, I mean, part of it was that, and also part of it was the nature of publishing and it being like, okay, well, this is actually quite different from the book that you're intending to write. And what ends up happening, which is sort of like a behind the scenes look at the publishing industry, is whenever you go with a publisher and you sign with a publisher, they have what's called first right of refusal to your next book. Or this is often the case. So that meant that if I went with this idea and this publisher, they would probably be wonderful. I'm not saying that they wouldn't be, but there would be a precedent set within that ecosystem that this is the first book that she wrote. And so there might be some expectation that I'm going to write more books like that and never really end up getting to the book that I really wanted to write. Which, you know, I'm sure that that would have been an incredible experience in its own way. But it's different than the one that I'm having right now.
Psst, Trisha popping in because I have a couple super amazing, awesome things happening that I've made super easy for you. One, I have a daily text message subscription. And yes, it is actually daily. Every single day, you get a text message from me on your phone in your regular text that has like a prompt, a reflection question. On Mondays, we have a new affirmation and I send you a mantra screensaver to send on your phone. I can send you voice memos and pictures through it. It's super, super cool. I send them at different times throughout the day so that you don't just get like used to it. Like, oh, that's 8 a.m. That must be my message from Trisha. Nope. I pop in, bring you some connection, some inspiration, some reflection points, some coaching, and they all come right to your text messages. So go to yourjoyologist.com /text to check it out. It's a month-by-month subscription, so you can try it out, cancel it, and it's sort of like Netflix. If you cancel it, then you'll still receive the text until your next billing cycle is up. And you can use code JOY3 to get $3 off your first 3-month subscription, which only makes it $9.99 a month. And you might be thinking, oh, why do I need to pay for text messages? I can go to social media and I have all these other things for inspiration. Yes, but when you open social media, right, doesn't it end up being like, you might see something powerful and then, oh, but now you see this and you're lost in comparison and that. I don't know about you, but I'm trying to take myself more off online stuff. So get a text. I've gotten great feedback of saying like, wow, these text messages are super powerful. Wow, I never really realized the power of a text. So try it out. Why not? It's only $9.99 for the first 3 months. Like I said, you can cancel anytime and give yourself that chance to see, wow, what could these do for me by just getting a daily text that has me connecting to me, setting an intention, looking at things differently. Go to yourjoyologist.com/text. I honestly feel like you may be the first person, and I still feel one of the few people that I hear using the term self-talk. Like, I think when I was seeing you use it, then I was like, oh, yeah, I think, like, yeah, I do self-talk too. Or like, and that's how I've been. Like, people be like, oh, do mindset work. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess that's what mine, like, I'm like legitimately honest that is me just like, I'm doing my stuff and I'm sharing it and I don't know what, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, yeah, that is, I do mindset work. Oh, this, whatever. Like, I'm just like, oh, I guess that could qualify or this, but I wasn't, you know, like, so where did like that come from for you? For like, this is what it is, self-talk. And like that is my thing. Well, not that you're obviously more things, but the primary, and that is then what you wanted this first book to be about, self-talk.
Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting.
Just that term, using that term. That's what I'm saying. Like, I still don't even think of that to use that term. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess a lot of the stuff I do is self-talk too. I don't know. Like,
yeah, I mean, when I first thought of it and I first thought of WANT, which, like you said, stands for Women Against Negative Talk, I mean, that was in 2007. And so that definitely was not a phrase that was being used. I don't know. Obviously, this is a phrase that other people used. I did not coin the term self-talk. Like, it was around beforehand. I don't know where I heard it or where I got it. But even from those early days, I was like, oh, this is what's at the core. This is the thing that people are not talking about. And if they're talking about it, they're talking about it in a either more passing way, or they're talking about it when it relates to body image, or, and this is again, early 2000s, or they're talking about it as like a supporting example to a greater thesis. But where are the people and the places that are talking about self-talk as this, like the word that I used before, this ecosystem that exists within us that isn't inherently good or bad? It's information. And so when I started WANT and I decided that I really wanted to lean into researching, studying, talking about, generally obsessing about this thing called self-talk, it was really out of a place of being angry that people were being given such limited tools to even just view this thing that I was like, this is so important. This informs everything.
And what do you remember? You said you don't remember like where you even heard that term, but like, and I know back in probably your original episode, we talk about that, but like, was there even something that like, you know, was it in a spin class or an exercise class? Was it in a therapy session? Like, where was even the idea of self-talk? Like, where you said you're like, we're getting angry that people don't know about this. Where did you yourself start to be like, oh, what's happening in there?
Yeah. I mean, there's sort of two parts. The first part is when I was in college, I developed a host of eating and body-related disorders, which anyone who has gone through an eating or body-related disorder knows that it is very rarely about the food or about your body. It is mental illness. And what I experienced was sort of a mashup, a potpourri of eating and body related disorders, one of them being something called orthorexia, which is in essence an unhealthy focus on health. And again, this was the early 2000s. So not only were people talking about things in a very different way when it came to mental health and body image at the time, but I only found out that this was maybe something that I was experiencing because I was about to say Googling, but I was probably Ask Jeeves-ing what was going on with me. That was the search engine back in the day for anyone who's listening who does not know the internet without Google. And I found this one website that was created by the doctor who coined the term orthorexia. And I was like, oh, this sounds exactly like me. And, you know, later I found out, like, I was also struggling with, like, dabbling in anorexia, bulimia, exercise bulimia, all of these different things. But because things were so under-researched, underfunded, and just not spoken about back then, I couldn't find anywhere that actually was speaking to what I was going through and that was able to support me on a journey forward. So I was like, I am going to have to figure this out myself because it was also affecting my voice. I was a musical theater major. And when I was in a voice lesson one day and my voice teacher called me out and was like, Katie, I don't know what you're doing, but you've got to cut it out because it's starting to affect your voice. That was really the moment where I was like, this thing that makes me me, it is now, I'm losing it. Like, I might lose it entirely if I don't figure out what is going on with me. And in that period of time, I sort of played detective within myself. I've always been a super highly proprioceptive person, hyper aware person. And so I started to use that to help me instead of hurt me. And what I realized is that there were so many conversations that I was seeing in the media, on TV, but I was hearing out loud from the people and particularly women in my life that were so what I now call casually negative. You know, I hate my whatever, I'm so whatever, I'm not smart enough. And I realized that this was a language that I had internalized as my own. And so when that sort of aha moment came later on to start Want, that was seeing one of the very first body positive, if you will, commercials. While I was on vacation with my family, it was the Dove Real Bodies commercial. I was like, oh my God, this is revolutionary. And also because I had paid attention to this self-talk stuff, I was like, this is amazing. And also, where's the place that's talking about this beyond a commercial, right? Or beyond our bodies, or giving people a robust toolkit to help them shift their self-talk in a lasting way, even if it doesn't have to like do with their body, it might do with relationship, career. And that's when I was like, I'm going to start something. It's going to be called Want, Women Against Negative Talk. It's going to give people tips, tools, motivation, inspiration to shift their self-talk. And like we talked about before, that was something that I thought of at the time. I sort of soft launched, if you will, and then it faded into the background for a few years because what I realized in hindsight is that I had thought of the idea that I so needed at that time.
Yeah. There's so many ways when you're saying like those negative, like I think like people don't even realize it. And it's so interesting what can happen when you're like suddenly hyper aware. Like, I remember a friend of mine who was all like had such self-depreciating humor. And I remember at a time like laughing at everything. And then I had some different awareness and was like, it's not funny. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, so it was like me. And then even just like how we can be like, oh, I'm the worst. I'm being so bad. And people, you can say these things in a lighthearted way. Like, I'm the worst at blah, blah, blah. I'm being so bad. Like, eating my French fries, like, whatever. In those sorts of things, those again, we're still like more food or whatever body related, but like, yeah, I'm so like we talk that people can toss it around in ways that it doesn't feel like you're being negative because you might be saying it with a lighthearted energy or again, the self-depreciating humor, But really, it's like once you start listening, it's like, why are you saying that?
Right.
Like, what are you really saying? Like, your energy might be one way, but you're also, there also is that your energy is the other way. But also, I think it's more casual to like write off the blah, 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 blah. Well, I'm self-aware.
Yeah.
But well, like, you're not.
It's similar. It's similar to, you know, how you talk about the word should. And I remember when you were on my podcast, The Wantcast, I was like, so are there any good shoulds? And you're like, huh? First. And then you made such a wonderful point that was, we don't even realize how often we are using this word. And so even if we think we're using it in a quote unquote good way, we're still reinforcing that this is a word that we're using. So it's going to be easy to use it in those times when it's, you know, it's more tempting to lean on it. And it's very, very, very similar to negative self-talk. And like you said, like the self-deprecating humor, self-talk is like a language, basically. And I talk about this in the book, how do you learn a language? You learn it by practicing it internally, but you can't just do that. Like, in order to become fluent, you have to practice it externally as well. So even those times where we're thinking, oh, I'm going to self-deprecate to be like more relatable, those are times where you are reinforcing that negative self-talk. And so when it feels like that's the only thing that takes up your brain, of course it's going to be hard to shift that. I don't talk about stopping your self-talk. I talk about shifting it because we are humans, not robots, thankfully. And we have a whole host of human emotions. And so if we can look at it through that lens and recognize that those small moments where we can shift, like you said, that self-deprecating humor or celebrate ourselves in the moment instead of downplaying our accomplishments, those moments are actually going to help you build the language that you want to learn and you want to be able to lean on in those times when you're feeling that self-doubt take over, you know?
Yeah. And that too, like when you said something about like, sometimes it might be they're using the language to be like more relatable or the self-depreciate. And it also too, it's like, because we're trying to construct the idea that we want other people to have us. So it's like, let's go back to the like, oh, I'm eating fries and a burger or whatever. And so then this is something that I remember from years ago, and I'm sure still happens. Not in my bubble. It hasn't happened in a while, but I've been in a bubble.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, but like, oh, I'm being so bad, right? So then it's sort of like I make up that this person is looking at me and seeing my food choices or this. So I'm just going to like lightheartedly like say that. But really, but even, and if you're being self-depreciating in some way, like, okay, I'm going to like bring myself down a notch or whatever, try to be relatable. But then you're just like perpetuating that. So then you are putting, not just for yourself, this is bad. Then you're telling other people, I think this is bad or blah, blah, blah. Or like, you know, it's if, or if you're self-depreciating and like, let me like, I'm trying to be more relatable and grounded or whatever. And I see this with some amazingly powerful, badass humans on the internet. I will see them doing self-depreciating humor. People that are leading these manifesting, magnifest, blah, blah, like whatever, big level stuff. And they're amazing humans. And I'll see them doing self-depreciating stuff and little bits of negative self-talk. And I wonder in a lighthearted way and like, look at how self-aware I am. And again, it's like, but that is perpetuating the issue. You are still planting those seeds that that's what you think about themselves and the people that are then watching that. So you might think like, let me dumb myself down or whatever to be relatable. But then you're just perpetuating that that's the idea to be relatable. Or like, you know what I mean? Like too, like there's so many ways that that can affect us, but really it's like we can think we're being relatable and really we're just perpetuating that idea.
Totally, totally. Or what will happen is if we think if we say it first, it won't hurt as much if someone else says it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And it really is this like fear of what other people think. So like, let me just put that out there. Like it's a protection mechanism, but then I'm always like, well, what matters is what do you think? What do you believe? We're so used to looking outside of ourselves and thinking that that's the reality, but whoa,
yeah.
What do I think? What do I want to believe about myself?
Yeah. And look, there is I'm not going to tell people that if they are ever using self-deprecating humor, that that is a bad thing and that I expect them to never do that again, because that is very, very unrealistic. I mean, in writing the book, I even found research that said we, even if we think that we bond more over the positive things and like the shared interests, we actually form stronger bonds oftentimes over like the shared enemy or the things that we don't like. And so that is something, if we can look at it as like, oh, I'm trying to make a connection here, it sort of reframes things. It offers us grace to ourselves. And, you know, sometimes there is a time and a place for self-deprecating humor, but if that's the thing that you're leaning on for your connections, there might be something else going on and it might be worth a deeper dive and a closer look.
Yeah, that reminded me of oftentimes with like mom friends and all the kids are playing together and we're catching up while our kids are playing, that how often it can end up being just like a vent complain session about mm-hmm. these kids that we love. But like in a way, I'm sure mom gets this of like, oh, what do you feel? It's dinner time is so hard, or like this, like, what are you feeding your kid, or this? Like, so it's like we are like trying to support each other, but it really like, okay, this, or I know, like, you know, so it's like we're trying, but really I realize afterwards, like, oh, I don't feel so great because really we were just, yeah, we're like bonding about the difficultness.
Right. Well, and it's sort of like
of our children.
It's like that story of the boy who cried wolf, right? Like sometimes you do need to be able to vent to someone or get support on like something that's really, really hard, or just be like, okay, I need to be real right now. Things are so lousy and like I just need to get it out and talk to someone about it. Like sometimes those things are really real. However, if you're in a cycle of bonding over the negative things, then it's like, okay, well, what really does matter then? If everything matters so much that you are giving it the space to take in your head and your heart to like complain about it or to vent about it, like if you're venting about everything, is anything worth venting about? You know, it sort of puts everything on this low level instead of creating those highs and lows that are necessary to live a human life.
Yeah, no, what I've seen in those particular sessions is like, it does feel good to be like, oh, here's somebody else that gets it, that mm-hmm. gets the struggle of how hard it can be to feed these children.
Yeah.
And so it does feel good. And to like, again, we're changing ideas. And what I've noticed is, and I also want to bring, like, let's not just be there. So it's like, great. We're going to be here. Let's vent about this challenging aspect of parenthood. That feels good to like have this adult conversation about something we're both going through or have gone through. And how else can we like bring some like life, joy, celebration into the conversation? So that's what I have been noticing, that like, I'm so glad I have this. And also, oh, I don't want my entire relationship with these people to be like, we're venting about our children.
Totally. And it's in the book, there's a whole chapter and a whole part of the book where it basically says, like, if you find yourself in that negative self-talk loop, in that spiral, here are some questions that you can ask yourself. And one of those questions is, what is my priority? And is this one of them? Another question is, do I actually want to change things? Or do I just want to feel like I am doing something without actually doing it, you know? And I think that when we're able to recognize that we actually, something is our priority, that's when we're able to be proactive, not reactive, about whatever it is we're negative talking about. And when we realize, oh, this actually isn't a priority, that's when you get to ask yourself, well, okay, if it's not a priority, what is it? Is it a bonding mechanism? Is it a way to fill space? Is it a way to be relatable? Then you start to get to actually what's the core of what's happening. And you get to, again, make a choice. Am I going to be proactive or reactive with this information?
Can you say that question again? You said there were two questions and there was the second one.
The first question is, what is my priority? And is this one of them? And the second question is, do I like the idea of change?
Do I like the idea of change?
Or do I just like the process of convincing myself that I'm trying to figure it out?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because a lot of times we can harp on one thing over and over and over again and then actually not do anything about it.
Oh, yeah.
But
no,
in that process, we're like convincing ourselves that we're doing something when actually we like things just the way they are because it gives us something to complain and care about, you know?
Yeah, no, I just wanted you to say that in because it's so good. Because, yeah, like I have like a shakeup experience sort of thing. And one of the lessons was like, what are you complaining about? So like to get clear, like, okay, what are you continually complaining about? Like, is that something that's really happening? Like, okay, then like, it's okay to vent, of course, and have support in this. And like, of course, things are going to go wrong and it's hard and that. But like, is it something reoccurring? And do you actually want to change it? Or how can you see it differently? Or so sort of going through that, but like, yeah, that wording for that great was, I feel like it's the, like can be such, could be such a wake up call for people in like how you said that, like, wait, do I actually even want to change this? Or it's just something that I'm going to
I've definitely had conversations with people where I've said to them, like, look, I've heard this from you. These are people who I'm very close to, by the way. I would not recommend this approach to people that you don't have that intimate relationship with. But I've said to people, like, I've now heard you talk about this thing for years now. Is this something that you actually, like, want to change? Like, are you going to do something about it? And sometimes the answer is no. It just makes me feel good to complain about it. And it's like, all right, cool. Well, I can't change you then, but that information is important for me because then I understand what's going on and I can redirect the conversation in a way that is not going to keep feeding this beast that is just gnawing away at your insides.
Yeah, no, that's a great like awakening because for that other person, one, for them to be like, yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to change it. But then also for you as the person that's being receiving it and being vented to, it's okay. It doesn't mean that you have to be like, great. Then you're just like, all right, they really need to talk. Okay, I guess this is just their like monthly, quarterly, bam.
Mm-hmm.
They got to let it out about that thing that they are annoyed with and frustrated, and they are not going to change. They're choosing that as part of their life. And some days they're going to dump about it. And so then, yeah, then you can like redirect or this or like just know like this is all right. That's what this is.
And it's also, if we're going back to self-talk being like a language that we're learning and that we become fluent in, that awareness can help us not unintentionally learn that language, you know? So if you know that what they're actually looking for is they're like, no, venting makes me feel good. They're looking to feel some sort of relief or connection or whatever it is. Knowing that, how can you speak the language that you need to speak for yourself instead of adapting to speak the language that they are speaking, you know, instead of feeding and venting to bond or connect or be relatable or whatever, how can you start to, you know, either look for connection in different ways or, you know, be an ear without taking it on yourself, you know, because sometimes it's something that people have heard for years and years and years in therapy, I'm sure, that you can't change. You can very rarely change other people, but you can change how you respond to them. And that is a prime example.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I forget that people suffer with the like wanting to deeply help change, like whatever. Cause yeah, it can feel like it's somewhat your responsibility if this person's venting. All right. let's game face this. How can we do this? Whatever, blah, blah, blah. And so then again, like knowing, like you knowing, oh, they're not even going for a change. Like they just wanted to be heard. They need this space, whatever. And also realizing I don't have to provide the space. If that's their thing and you know they're going to change and you're annoyed the fact that they dump it on you, then be like, okay, you're not going to change it. Like, would you like, yeah, like I'm not available for these vents.
Right. And then there's like, it's an empowered conscious opt-in, right? If you are being available for that, then you're saying, okay, this is, you know, maybe this is someone that I love that I want to be there for. And I am at the same time able to put up the boundaries in my own head and heart. So I'm not taking that on. That is a conscious choice. It's also a conscious choice to say to this person that, you know, you're not available, or I really am not in a space to for vents and complaints right now. Like, I love you, but that's not what I'm available for. Or saying that in ways without saying it, you know, like being a little bit shorter than usual when you're in those conversations. Whatever it is, it's owning your agency in the situation.
Yeah. Like sometimes you don't even have to, some people, and you have to decide for each person and situation if it is, I'm not available for that. Sometimes it just, you don't even respond to that. They stop the vent and then you say, hey, did you hear? Or what good happened today? Like just redirecting the conversation. So it's like, that went out and here, and then they might pick up on the fact of, oh, I guess they're not available for that.
Or, I mean, so a move that I pull many times, and this isn't just in complaining or venting sessions, just a move that I pull a lot in life, in my conversations that might be useful for people when they're talking about these scenarios, is I will say, like, I will make a very clear unrelated segue. So I will say, so completely unrelated to what we were just talking about, or not even speaking remotely of this thing, like I will basically start and stop very abruptly.
Yeah.
And that also,
that's what I like meant, but you're like actually putting a transition in there. I was like,
oh yeah.
Let's talk about it. Well, you're like, oh, unrelated.
Yeah. Cause it also like it gives people pause, and especially if people are sort of stuck in that loop, it can get them out of that. It can sort of shake up the shake up, which is an offering that you have, I believe, right? Yes. It can sort of shake up that experience, and it also like brings some levity into the situation. It can get a laugh. Like, I am definitely about strong, firm, sometimes verbal boundaries spoken out loud when necessary. I also think that there are some people and some personalities where it's like, sometimes humor is the best way to approach that boundary. Sometimes the gentleness, sometimes the more assertiveness, like not every single situation is going to be the same. And so it also requires a little bit of reading the room and figuring out, okay, what can I, again, how can I be proactive and contribute to a more proactive and fulfilling moment for us both right now?
Yeah. I was even like, too, again, depending on the person and what they were venting about too, it could also like then be like, oh, how'd that feel to get that off your chest? You know what I mean? So it's also like, you're not even like, let me go down this lane with you of diving into that stuff. But like, you are then bringing attention to, I hope that supported you by getting that out, sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, my, one of my best friends in the universe, she is really, really good at having those types of conversations where someone might be struggling and might be having a tough time. And she is so wonderful at navigating the conversations of keeping it focused on the other person, asking open-ended questions and getting really curious, and also getting to a place of like, okay, like, what is this really about? Without asking, what is this really about? And those are, when you find those people in your life, like, hang on to those people for dear life, because they're so valuable.
That made me think of two of prompts or direction I've heard from I don't know who, but like, even when you're like in some sort of argument with someone or trying to, instead of like, okay, they've finished speaking and so now it's my turn, to just stick with them. So like, to be like, oh, is there anything else you want to say? Or is there, tell me more. Like, you know, like you think like, oh, I don't want to go down this track, but like maybe by going, tell me more. Like, then they can actually get to what's deeper. Like, oh, this is the top layer thing that's bothering me. And then it's like, oh, yeah, I'm just feeling really lost, or I'm really feeling unheard, or something like that. So, like, sometimes it can be like, you don't even have to address that. But just like, is there anything else? Tell me more about that. And then, like, it might end up resolving it sort of self because they have this space of like, oh.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes you do just need to let it all out. And then it's about, okay, I've let it out. Where do I go from here?
Yeah. So from this conversation that we just got into, I make up that in the book, want yourself, yeah, it's self-talk, but then also we are living in a world mm-hmm. with other humans. So mm-hmm. all sorts of talk, conversations, totally. Relationships, this, because we do not live in an isolated, what's happening in that self-talk is because of our surroundings and our life and our past and our everything.
Yeah. So the book sort of takes you through the process of shifting your self-talk in a real lasting way, which does not start with shifting your talk. Because, and I say this at the very beginning of the book because I just find it fascinating, there is actually a study that was done that there were two groups of people who were given these sort of generalized, what they called positive self statements at the very beginning of the study. And they had to say them out loud to themselves. And there were two groups. There was the one group that they had low self-esteem, and then there was the other group that had higher self-esteem. And what ended up happening is the people who had pre-existing high self-esteem, the positive self-statements actually ended up helping them a lot and helped them sustain that. The people who had lower self-esteem, and again, these were just like random positive self-statements, people who had lower self-esteem, many of them actually ended up feeling worse about themselves after saying those statements. And the reasoning is because they didn't find them believable, you know? So it was almost like there was this cognitive dissonance between the words that they were saying and the way that they felt. So if that is actually what's going on with self-talk, you can't just replace a bad phrase that you think negatively. You can't replace that negative phrase with a positive platitude. You actually can't start with the talk part. You have to start with the self part of self-talk. So the book takes you through the process of why you need a sense of self. How do you find yourself? Okay, how do I be myself? How do you be yourself out in the world? Then when life keeps lifing and people keep peopling, how do you stay yourself? And then how does that actually lead to wanting the self that you have? So yeah, about that internal work, but also so much about what is actually going on in the world around us and how we're relating to it.
Trisha again. One more thing that I have going on right now that you can join at any time, that is super easy, accessible, and powerful, is my drop-in messages. So besides my daily text subscription that you can join at any time, you can join my drop-in. What that is a private podcast feed. So just like you're listening to this, you would listen to my drop-in messages. You get 2 to 3 new drop-in messages each week, but they are bite-sized. I'm talking anywhere from 3 to 12 minutes. They are intentional. They are powerful. Half of them are locking you into deep inner confidence to owning who you are and what you want to be doing in the world. And the other half are tips, tools that are easy and doable to unblock you, to get you to move out of procrastination and into action. So
It's super accessible. Again, it comes right to a private podcast feed, 2 to 3 new drops a week. You also get an email every time one drops, so you remember to go listen to them. They are short. They are powerful. You can listen to them on the go. You can listen to them over and over again. Let's say you have an interview or something you're nervous about. Pull up the drop-in feed and pull up one of those messages that has you lock into deep inner confidence. You're feeling stuck about something. Open the drop-in feed. Which one of these like tool busting techniques or unblocking techniques do I want to try today? So you get to utilize it the back catalog and also get these new ones dropped into your feed every single week to remind you, oh yeah, I'm awesome. Oh yeah, I can do this. Oh yeah, this is how I am going to do this. All right, these are the messages that my one-on-one clients have been raving about for over a decade. And you get them for a very, very small price. So go check out yourdualgist.com/drop-in to get 6-month access to my drop-in powerful messages.
Wow, I love that. And I was not surprised to hear that about the study because as someone, I mean, I've loved and used and shared affirmations for over a decade. And for sure, when I first got into that, they were whoa over here. And then I myself started to realize once I started to understand more and allow myself to have the thoughts and feelings I had, like, because I used to be like, oh no, that's a doubt, a worry, a fear, a shame, whatever, like block that away. Like, I don't have those things because I'm a positive person. And once I started to like, okay, like, let's really see what's going on here, started to shift those. And then, but I do like, and that is how my brain is able to support myself, is to see what I'm hearing and feeling, which would be the more, if we want to label that like negative, and then what do I want to believe? I am able to do that, but making it be yes in a where I'm at today. So it's not like all the way over here now. But so the self-awareness too, but then again, realizing I've been doing all sorts of different stuff within my own self brain and whatever. And so I do have a lot more of like that groundedness of like figuring out, I guess, what your first step is. But even that, like, yeah, like I realized like, no, these affirmations, like you need different levels to them and the steps. It's like, you can't just say this when you're feeling like, if you've never actually loved your body and then you're like, I love my body as it is now, but you, your entire life have been taught by the world that you're not enough. And hey, like, yeah, you can't jump to that. So it's like the starting, what is the baby step affirmation thing?
That's and a like, great example. Yeah.
Like figuring, like realizing that and then just like, okay, like sort of, yeah, like figuring out these things that are not so far out that there's no way your brain can even wrap around it. So it's even like, oh, I'm opening myself up to support my vitamins or like, you know, just trying different things out over the years. But so what I wish I don't have the book yet to look through. So I didn't know any of that, but that, so wait, so so how do you do that? What is the first step? Like figure out the sense of self? What was your first?
I mean, the first thing, like before anything, the first part of the book is called You Need a Self. So it goes, you need a self, find yourself, be yourself, stay yourself, want yourself. So in the you need yourself section, what it really is arguing, because a lot of people will be like, oh yeah, I know who I am, or that's all hippy dippy fluffy stuff. Like, I don't need to dive into that. So it's really getting down to, okay, what's the difference between self-concept, self-image, self-esteem? So understanding like what it is that we're actually dealing with, because I think a lot of times these terms can be used, or even phrases like you just used body image as an example. A phrase like listen to your body will only do you any good if you know what it means to listen to your body. And so I really wanted to set people up for success with this book by starting things off with, okay, what is this sense of self? How is it built? And why do you need it? So I also do share stuff about something called emotional DNA, which was a term that was coined by a performance coach named Judy Wilkins-Smith. And she says that you think of your emotional DNA sort of like this blueprint that was created by all of the people before you on how you respond to the world. And this is something that is in flux always. So we're not just creating this emotional DNA and these stories and this self-talk from one thing, right? We're not just creating it from the media or that one thing that our parent said to us at that one time. It's really about how we are being shaped all the time by those who came before us and those who are all around us right now. And so for that first part of the book, I really, really wanted people to be able to grasp, okay, like, what is this thing and why does it matter? Because if we don't know that, then it's really, really hard to do this, you know, complicated and nuanced work.
Yeah. And I, you know, as you're saying that, I'm excited about it. And then also like, yeah, because I feel like, oh yeah, I'm always evolving, changing this. And like self, like I just can't just, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I don't know who I am at the same time mm-hmm. as I know who I am. It's like very much mm-hmm. the yeah. same. So I make up like, yeah, how you're teaching people to look at that. It's not as if this is this one sentence of who you are. Like, this is self, like, but it like, yeah, like, yeah, explain that a bit more of like, I can't even figure out how.
So how you are able to hold both at the same time of I know myself and I don't know myself? Is that what you're asking?
No, but just like, again, like defining self, like I don't really, you know, it can be so vast that like, how are you actually
right
having people channel yeah. into that?
Yeah. Well, first, it's important to recognize before getting to like a definition of self is that it is always going to, there are parts of it that are always going to be in flux, right? Because we're always growing and evolving and changing. Yourself is the core of who you are. It's where that place within you that knows, you know, some people might call it intuition or their gut feeling. It's that part of you that you can stand behind no matter what. So it's the core of yourself, of using the word, the core of who you are that you are able to trust as the truth of who you are. And again, that is nuanced. And so there's self-concept. So the concept of who you are. This is who I think I am. I'm actually going to pull up the book right here and read this on the air, because now that you ask, I want to make sure that I am saying all of these things correct. So yeah, psychologist Carl Rogers defines self-concept as the organized, consistent set of perceptions about yourself. So there's self-image, self-esteem, and then ideal self. So self-image is more of what you're talking about, right? Like, I know who I am. It's not necessarily how you feel about who you are. Self-esteem is more of that. How do I feel about this image of who I am? And that can include physical features, social roles, personality traits. It's how you feel about that definition of your you-ness. It's like the lens you look through to view your self-concept, and then self-esteem is the answer to the question, okay, how valuable am I? And not just like money or like where do I fit in, but it is usually comparative and it fluctuates between the ways that we experience life and the way that we evaluate ourselves. And then there's ideal self, which is who would I like to be? So if we're looking at this, like, I don't know, through the story that I told earlier, where I was feeling that led to the eating disorders and the body image issues, my self-image at that time told me, because it was really about my uniqueness, my specialness, my sense of control, my self-image was, I am not special enough. My self-esteem was, well, I guess other people are more special than me, because it's comparative, right? Self-esteem has to have something to bounce off of. And then my ideal self was, I need to be the most special person. That's who I need to be. So it's the image, the lens, how you compare yourself to others, and then who you want to be.
That's a little overwhelming.
Right? That's why I wrote a whole book about it and not an Instagram post.
But it also sounds from when you're talking about like the whole book, what I was hearing is that I feel like oftentimes we're focusing on ourselves and our thoughts mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. who are you in the world? And this is your life. And I think that's a lot of like my work is more focused that way. It sounded like you are taking the focus of, yeah, you're you and you're in this big world. Mm-hmm. That it's like, it sounds yeah. like you're bringing a lot of awareness and attention to, sure, you're going to figure out who you are, but again, you're not this isolated thing. And so it's like, that is such a big thing because sure, let me give you all these skills and tools and this, but then it's not like you're living in a bubble. Every single day, you're going to be confronted with things. Or, oh, now I'm good, but now my friend is dumping this on me. And am I available for this? Or how is that going to affect me? Or whatever. Is that true that you're bringing a lot more awareness to you live in a world?
Yeah. Yeah. I think
and that's going to affect your self-talk.
Yeah. No, it's so important because I think that we can convince ourselves that we are doing all of the work of, you know, knowing ourselves, building a self-image that is helpful, not hurtful. And also, all of that can get challenged once we are out in the world with actual people and actual scenarios. And the goal is not to be in this bubble that is either completely isolating or is just filled with people and ideas and places that are just going to validate us over and over and over again. Because like you said,
well, it's impossible.
It's impossible. And if you were to do that, then you, even if you feel like, yes, I'm able to fabricate that, like Katie, Trisha, I don't know what you're saying. I can do that. Like, what's going to happen when you come up against something else that is not validating you in that way and is not supporting you in that way, then you don't have the experience and the muscle strengthened to be able to manage your mindset and yourself in that experience. And so it really is about how do we do this work on the inside, simultaneously doing it on the outside. How do we do this work on the inside and care about myself as the individual? And how do I do that work on the outside and care about the collective as well? Because those two things are intricately linked.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's what I was like. I still get it. And I was like, yeah, it just seems like. And again, I was like, my work is self-focused. If it is, and it's like, but I also am constantly like, the world is a noisy place and your mind. And that's why it's like, nothing is done. You're never like healed, done. I figured that out. I'm never going to feel shame again or whatever, because the world and that. But like, it sounds like I'm just excited to get your book and how you're approaching things from, I don't know, it feels like you're coming at it from like an external and internal place. If that yeah. makes sense. Like,
thank
I don't
you.
Know.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, I mean, that's what I hope it to be. And yeah, to go back to your earlier question of like, what is the self, for a really, really easy sort of high level or low hanging fruit definition for people, yourself is the story that you have built. And so if yourself is the story that you have built and that, again, that you believe, then you start to get to the question of like, okay, well, what stories have I been telling that builds this self? And how much of this is actually what I believe about who I am? And how much of this have I picked up from others around me? Like, your self-told story is the most important story that you will tell for your entire life. And it's the most important story that you will tell to yourself. It's the most important story that you will, in obvious or not so obvious ways, tell others. And it's going to inform how you walk through the world and what you do next and next and next and next.
Yeah. Yeah, I not to keep bringing it back to my own book, but like I was getting like when you just said it that way, it's like, yeah, it's like it's is like sounds like the like shedding of the shoulds too. It's like, yeah, like we're not even aware. Like my book is very much like you don't even know how much, you know, you think you know who you are or this, But no, the shoulds, and that's like getting clear on who you are. It's like, yeah, it's like you might think this is who I am, but wait, is that, or is that some construct that you built? Or I bet there's even too, the like, sometimes we can attach ourselves to an identity of who we once were, or who we thought we should mm-hmm. be, or who people want us to be. And then it's like, but wait, is that?
Totally.
My
totally.
True self? Is that my real self? Is that the self yeah. I want to be? Or is that this construct I felt?
Totally. And I think that, you know, and hopefully this is clear in the book, I think that your true self, so to speak, can also be some of that. It can be the person who was doing the thing or being the person because that's what they felt was what they needed to do to get them through that time or to succeed or whatever it is. And so I really, really stress to people that it's about looking, like we talked about before with the complaining and venting, looking at the information that's underneath whatever it is you are self-talking about, not necessarily labeling it positive or negative right off the bat, looking at what is actually happening and starting to gauge, okay, how much of this feels like it is me? How much of this is something that I learned or took on from someone else? And that's a great thing. That's a wonderful thing to be able to take on things from someone else. Like, that's how we learn information, is someone imparts that information to us. And the cool thing is that we get to decide with that awareness how much of that becomes the core of who we believe ourselves to be.
Yay. Is there anything? Anything especially that you feel like might surprise people from your book, or a book called Want Yourself, or a book called Self-Talk?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think that the biggest surprise to people might be that, well, they're wherever they get it, they're most likely getting it in the self-help, so to speak, or self-development section of their bookstore or website. But the thing is that the way that I view self-talk is way more urgent than that, than a fleeting feel-good moment. Self-talk, I believe, is the puzzle piece in the puzzle of social change that we are talking about not nearly enough. Because think about, obviously, we need both, right? Like, just saying nice things to yourself or believing in yourself or having a solid, fulfilling sense of who you are, like, that's all good and great. And also, we need policy shifts, right? Like, those are not going to create new laws. They are not going to stop racism, homophobia. They are not going to slow down climate change. We need people to be able to stand by themselves in such a deep way and such a true way that when it's time to speak up and speak out, that they will, without softening their voices. Or if there is, I don't know, let's talk about running for office. If there is an opportunity, like now, it's like we've had women running for president multiple times now, right? These are women who had to have that base of proactive, positive self-talk behind them saying, I can do this. I can run for president. I can totally take on that role. And that is like, we could have all of the policies in place, but if we don't have people to actually uphold them or step into those more proactive ways of being, then we're just going to keep perpetuating the harmful, hurtful norms that we have seen for centuries, you know? So it's a way, I think it might be more surprising that it is a much more urgent book than people might expect.
So yeah, like, because what I'm hearing, like, okay, yes, personal development, self-help books, of course, are necessary and supportive, but they can, you know, like, yeah, but you're like, no, this, like, you need to shift this now. This right. isn't like a journey. I don't know if that,
right.
Like, it is a journey.
Totally.
But like, Yeah, like yeah. It's sort of like not just one to like add to your collection to eventually yeah. get to. Like, no, you let's activate this now and out loud. Not like yes. you're doing the work in your house, you read that book and you're shifting, but like have a conversation with right. your friends, with your this, with your that. Like you're actually changing your self-talk and bringing it to the forefront of conversations.
Right. And it's not about feeling good. I think that's a common misconception when it comes to shifting your self-talk, is that the goal is to feel good all of the time. It's not about feeling good. It's not about chasing happiness. It's about feeling that fulfillment and feeling that deep sense of, oh, no, this is the right thing to be doing through life's highs and lows. Because like we talked about before, life will keep lifing. Things are going to feel bad. You are going to be a human experiencing human emotions that might not always feel good. But just because something doesn't feel good doesn't mean that we are bad, you know? Like there's a difference between the feeling and then the feelings about the feelings. And so I hope that this book helps people reevaluate their feelings about their feelings so that they can start actually moving forward and making the change in the world that they say that they want to make.
Yeah. I get that. And that's what I feel like a lot, like I was saying with my own book and my work, it's like, it's about facing yourself and being honest with mm-hmm. yourself. And so when you're saying it's not necessarily going to make you feel good, like, yeah, it's not going to make you feel bad. But the fact is like, no, you're just going to be more aware of what's happening. And then, yeah, like you said, not making, oh no, shame, doubt, this, whatever, like, and not like, oh no, I'm a terrible person or I messed up on my personal development journey or whatever. No, it's just like, oh, that's what's happening here. But that awareness actually can release a lot of tension and a lot of other feelings. So it actually, like, you might not be like, yeah, like you're flying high every single day. Nothing's getting you down. It's not going to make you feel good that way. But because you're facing the stuff and not feeling bad about the stuff or trying to pretend you're not in it, you do actually, it does alleviate stuff, and you're a human with emotions and it's never going to stop.
And life totally. Stop. And that's part of why, like I said, I wanted to write a book about this and not like an Instagram post, because it is, first of all, I wanted to give people I was about to say succinct, but it's like 255 pages. So I don't know if you call that succinct, but I wanted to give people a clear guide and blueprint for how to go about this journey, because awareness is fantastic. And then also, what happens when you are feeling overwhelmed? What happens when you are feeling a sense of doubt? What happens when you're feeling fear? The answer to all of these, yes, obviously awareness is a part of it, but a lot of what I see is people saying like, okay, the steps are just be aware of what you're feeling. Okay, bye. And I was like, no. That's then where you get to choose your own adventure. So let's start to give people some tools and suggestions, and multiple tools and suggestions to add to their tool belts that they can pull out when they need them, when it works for them.
So in the book, you have like sections that are like, okay, you're feeling overwhelmed, you're feeling anxious, you're feeling this, and then like direct tools or questions or whatever to ask yourself to then like support yourself through it. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. So like in the, let's say, stay yourself section, let's take that for example, there is a whole chapter around overwhelm, which is something that I think an overwhelming amount of us deal with. And there is...
That's how I started my day, with right? overwhelm.
Me too.
I made a wonder walk reel today because I was like, I am overwhelmed. And let me get
And you pulled on that tool that you had, which is like awesome that you've cultivated that. But I describe like in that chapter, I describe an exercise that actually Jeremy, my husband, thought of multiple years ago called the planned freakout. And that is exactly what it sounds like. It is a time that you plan to freak out. You lose your shit intentionally so that you can find your shit again. And so I outline that. And then after that, it's like, All right. Well, sometimes we don't have the luxury of planning our freakouts. Sometimes we find ourselves in the middle of a good old freakout, no planning necessary. So what do you do then? And that's when I give, you know, more of a host of suggestions on what to do there. There's a chapter all about fear. There's a whole chapter about making yourself what I call other people proof. So when other people are cutting you down, what happens then? I share a story about an Instagram bully that I had multiple years ago. It was on the tamer side, which I'm thankful for, but I've definitely had the more intense harassment, catcalls, stuff like that. But in that moment, I played a little game and I made a little experiment out of it. And I shared a screenshot of what the Insta bully said to me. And I won't reveal it. People can read the book for that. But I was like, all right, let's see how people respond to this. And an overwhelming amount of people were like, well, this is just a really sad person and we should just send them love and light. And I was like, I call bullshit on love and light because this is giving them a free pass. So what do we do when we are cut down by other people and we're over the love and light? Like, why are we made to believe that we need to make excuses for the people who treat us badly? Like, that's not a great skill to cultivate. And so what do you actually do? And so it really is filled, the book is filled with real life examples like that. And I tried to keep them as, we talked about relatable before, but as relatable, as down to earth as possible. I don't really share a ton of like Oprah style aha moments in the book because I wanted to speak to the real life, like you said, that all of us are living every single day. I didn't want to speak to just these one-off experiences that maybe you'll have this as a rock bottom and then this will help. Like, we all have our different rock bottoms. They all look differently. And I think that's something that you do so well. Like, when you describe your own really two turning points in your life, like when your dad passed away, and then earlier in your life when you were going through your own mental health struggles, like these are moments that I feel like the way that you describe them, anyone can relate to whether they've been through that particular experience or not, because you're really getting to what the core of it was for you. And In this book, I hope to do that for other people. I hope that the stories that I do share are stories that are all of our stories in some way, shape, or form.
I'm so excited to get the book, and I'm not just saying that.
I am so excited for you to get. You will be getting. Like, I really am genuinely. In 2 weeks.
I'm really like genuinely intrigued, and like I get books sent to me all the time from so many amazing people and I love them all. But yeah, like I am really like intrigued by this, and it is like, oh yeah, but no, I do self-talk, I guess. And like this, but like, I'm like, oh, I'm really love like how you're coming at this. And
thank you. Yeah. That means so much coming from you. And let me just tell you, as I'm looking at your book behind you on the shelf, our books are going to look so good next to each other.
I know. They're both black.
With their dark covers. I'm so excited for them to be bookshelf buddies.
Oh my gosh. And yeah, they might be like actual neighbors in some. Yeah, because we both have H last names.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
I hope so.
I really hope so. I mean, and if not, whenever I see both of our books in a place, I'm just going to strategically put them together. Oh my gosh, that makes me so happy.
Yeah, I wonder. That's exciting. Well,
that means so much. And you have been such, like I said, such a huge part of this journey and have had a behind the scenes look at this for so freaking long. I am just so happy and so excited for you to get it in your hands. I should be receiving those copies next week. And so, you'll be getting a special care package in the mail.
Exciting. All right. Well, I am so excited for you. everybody, want yourself. This will probably, yes. This will probably end up coming out like right with the release week, unless you want it come out earlier to push pre-orders or whatever.
Week of October 3rd. Let's freaking
go. It's coming so soon. Yeah. And you know, if you guys need to schedule a, what was it?
A planned freak out. Yeah. A PFO, if you will.
Get that in your calendar.
Yeah. I mean,
and get Katie's book to learn some more tools.
Yeah. There's a whole outline for a planned freak out in there. I will probably be leading a couple planned freak outs around launch. Yeah. So that we can like all do it together. Cause it's something that I found even from that first meeting with my agent, like when she first read the manuscript, she was like, and the planned freak out, like everybody loves the PFO. And so I give Jeremy credit for that, because that's like so people cool. will read it in the book. It was his idea to begin with. And he's like, I accept the thanks. I do not need any royalties or any recognition. Just a hug and more PFOs in the future.
Love it. But that sounds so cool. So like, yeah, I have like group. Awesome. I love you, Katie. And I'm so excited.
I love you so much. I love you so much. Thank you so much for having me on again.
Of course. Yeah. Let's see. You're definitely you're the person that's been on the most. Well, maybe Jason Mraz.
I mean, Jason's like been on a few times.
You might have beat him, though. I don't know.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know. I'll have to do the math.
I was going to say, like, are Jason and I going to be, like, going in, like, a cage match?
I know. I'm like, wait a minute. I might have to do the you might be tied. We'll see.
Yeah. I was going to tell people, like, if they want to find me, they can find me, obviously, like, get the book. But they could find me on Instagram at Katie Horwich, or basically on every single season of Trisha Huffman's podcast.
I hope you love that conversation with Katie. Again, go get her book, Want Yourself. You can go to wantyourself.com and find links to all the place, or just go ahead and order it wherever you order books. If you haven't gotten my book yet, F the Shoulds Do the Wants, come on, go pick that one up too. Or while you're ordering her book, leave a review for my book and then go back and leave one for her. Reviews really, really help authors and books to become more discoverable, and publishers to see, oh, good, people are enjoying this book that we published. So it's not just, I mean, it's for also, right, other readers to like read and be like, oh, wow, okay, that's what people say. But anyway, your reviews matter. Put them out there. Don't worry too much about saying the perfect thing. As you know, my go-to is any is better than none. So don't hold yourself back from doing whatever it is you want to do, whether it's to leave a review for a book that you love, or try something you've been wanting to do, or make a change in your life because you think you have to do it this ideal best way. Any progress is better than no progress. Any minutes is better than no minutes. Baby steps are steps. By the way, I still have a few mugs with that saying on it. The product shop inventory is really, 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 really dwindling. I haven't been pushing them very much, but that one, we still have some mugs, and it's a great motto and mantra. By the way, too, I plan on doing more print-on-demand items. I am closing the shop, meaning like of me buying bulk inventory for it to sit in my warehouse to send out whenever people want to buy it. But I will still be putting my phrases on products that get printed on demand, so then there's no wasted inventory. So let me know. Feel free to email me, DM me. Let me know which of like my phrases you would love to see on products, and also what you would want, because that also opens up like new avenues for me, like sweatshirts, hat, baseball hat, beanie, you know, of course, mugs, magnets and those things. But there's different things that I can do with print on demand, because I don't have to like think about, oh, I need to make hundreds of these and then hope they sell. So that is a very cool way that I love to be able to do print on demand now, and plan to be putting more stuff out there. All right, thanks again for listening. Go get Want Yourself.